Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, my friends. It's Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Well, let's see. Trayvon's autopsy shows he had drugs in his system and bruises on his knuckles. Well, you know, the guy doing the autopsy is probably some white guy. Or maybe he was a white hyphen black hyphen Hispanic. Or perhaps he was a Hispanic hyphen white hyphen black. Or maybe he was black, white, Hispanic, but we don't think so. Or he wouldn't have found this. Wouldn't have been able to see it. Anyway, like Obama, you know, he's a white Arab black, 50% white, 43% Arabic, and about 7% black. Zimmerman, it turns out, is about as black as Obama. Yeah. So these people are a joke. I mean, this would all be just laughable, except the jesters in this farce have scepters that are not mere baubles. The doctor's report of the injuries sustained by what Newsweek called white with Hispanic origins Zimmerman, and now we learn, by the way, we must include black from his great-grandfather on his mother's side. So, you know, white with Hispanic and black origins Zimmerman sustained some pretty serious injuries, according to his doctor. But this report comes a day or so, maybe even 2 days after the incident. And besides, and what really is important, the doctor was probably a white Asian Hispanic. I hate all this hyphenation nonsense, don't you? And you know how those people are, don't you? I mean, you know, those people whose first designation in their hyphenated race designation is white. No, they're all bigoted, of course. All of them racist. The whole system is organized to kill black people and help the white guys, white hyphen hyphen hyphen, get away with it. After all, it's a world in need ruled by white greed, right? Because, of course, blacks aren't greedy. No, you've seen the riots where they break in there, steal all that stuff. Yeah, they're not greedy. Neither are Hispanics, by the way. The only race in the world that's greedy is white. But, of course, the whites are the ones who freed the slaves, yeah? Led the world in the establishment of liberty for all under the mantra that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. I think a white guy wrote that. A mantra, by the way, a principle that invariably led to the freeing of black slaves in America. Thank God. But who wants to think about that? You know, and this farce would be a hoot, a laugh, were it not that these jesters hold scepters that are not mere bubbles. The prosecutor in the Zimmerman case has behaved so improperly and unprofessionally that even a few very scant voices from the liberal side of things are asking questions about it. You see, folks, what these radicals want is a lynching. Now, that's what they want. They're only sorry they couldn't get it going. They want a mob to lynch Zimmerman. And ironically, the anger motivating these people is not anger against Zimmerman. No, it's not. It's against you, white guy. Zimmerman should not take it personally. The anger you see that roiled and boiled against Zimmerman is an anger that's constantly simmering against you, white America. It is an anger that has been ginned up by the left's constant propaganda, mostly in the ghettos of this country, but from the ghettos into the mainstream consciousness of American culture with the help of a complicit entertainment industry laboring to convince us all that the minorities are kept under the heels of oppression of white devils. Yeah, it's the same thing kids in Islamic republics, so-called, are fed from the cradle to the crypt. Little Muslims are taught that America is the great Satan. They are taught to chant death to America, to hate all Americans. And you know what? Many of our kids, especially our minority kids, are growing up in public school systems and in an environment that is conditioning them to hate America and to view America as the great Satan. And particularly white America is white devils. And you might have laughed off these jesters as promoting absurd nonsense some decades past, but now these jesters hold scepters that are more than mere baubles. you know, like that white Arab black president of ours. For example, we recently learned he attempted to bribe his pastor to keep quiet. You know, those white Arab blacks, they're something else, man. Now, I hope you appreciate satire and can follow my logic here. Well, Barack has learned one thing from all this. He's not the only one who can throw his friends under the bus. What's with this throw them down the stairs thing I'm hearing? I thought the expression was throw them under the bus. I guess the new gang slang for throwing your mama under the bus is now throw her down the stairs. There was a nursery rhyme, wasn't there, that said something like, I don't know, somebody refused to say his prayers, so he grabbed him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs or something like that. Is that where this comes from? But if you know where this throw him down the stairs thing comes from, call me or write me. Explain that to me. Call me at 888-770-8000. That's 888-770-8000. Or you can write me. Go to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com. Click on the Contact Us button. TheBrainMassageShow.com. I mean, Joe Arpaio has sent his posse out on the hunt for Obama's birth certificate. And he has expanded his search to include his college records now. But, of course, Joe is a white guy. So that explains everything. You know, hey. And by the way, I'm not even sure if he's a hyphenated white guy. I mean, he might be just plain old white. Oh, mercy. You can't trust a plain old white guy, you know. And well, besides, you can't trust anybody that's even partly white, right? Like Obama, who's white Arab black. Anyway, like I said, the jesters in this farce now hold scepters that are not mere baubles. Holder, Attorney General, is attacking Joe, using the power of the Attorney General's office to intimidate and bully him. And it's clear it's as retribution for Joe's aggressive campaign to get at the truth concerning Obama's birth certificate and college records and all of that. And then, of course, all that's a red herring, right? You know, that bit about forged birth certificates and all that business. That's just a side issue with no real bearing on anything important. Man, it doesn't matter if he's not really legally qualified to hold the office of president. Who cares, really? I mean, you know, why does he have to prove that? The last dance by the jester-in-chief is now a three-stepper. You know, he keeps dangling the birth cert thing out there, chasing down whether he's legally qualified to hold the office, while hiding the very real possibility or suggesting that the real problem here is that he lied to Harvard to get a grant for school by claiming to be African. So now we start looking at that, right? And all the while, the third step is that, in fact, he is holding the office as a usurper. Because just like his grandmother said, and just like his wife said, and just like he said in his earlier unpublished biography, the man was born in Kenya. So the latest method to break the hounds from the scent is to say it's all about an effort to hide the embarrassing fact that he lied about his origin in order to take advantage of affirmative action. You know, something most people in his circle would consider relatively harmless. Having empathy for the underprivileged black, well, actually, the white Arab black, but that's another matter. Evoking an empathy from the underprivileged black, just trying to aspire in this greedy white ruled world. You know what I mean? Listen, there would be sufficient sympathy and empathy for Obama, if that was the issue, to carry him through the scandal, you know, that he lied about his birth to get affirmative action assistance to go to school. I mean, he could wade through that without getting more than a spattering of mud on his $1,000 slacks. A slap on the wrist, payment of a fine, right? That's all. That he wouldn't even notice out of his millions. This would be less of a problem for Obama than Clinton being impeached and disbarred from practicing law for perjuring himself. And yeah, but you know that. So no. Friends, I'm convinced the Bamster is concerned about getting himself disqualified from serving as president on the technicality that he's not a natural-born citizen, in a way similar to how he disqualified two political rivals on technicalities when he was running for his first public office. Did you know about that? Yeah, coming back to haunt him. And now, I must conclude the first segment of the show for today. This latest from Obama's secreted past is that we find out his Selective Service record is a forgery. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. This guy's too much. And guess what? Just when Arpaio puts in a Freedom of Information request for the public record of Obama's Selective Service record, they change the rules, and they rule these records are not a matter of record, so they can destroy them, and they're planning to destroy them all. How far would they go to protect this guy? When are you going to have enough of this? and stand up and demand they put a stop to this nonsense. These jesters are not funny anymore. The scepters they hold are not mere baubles. They have real power, and they're using it to destroy your liberties. And what do we have? I mean, what's the GOP's answer to this mess? Romney? A man who spent millions to viciously attack Newt and Santorum? To smear them with distortion and innuendo and even outright lies? A man who waded hip deep in the muck of dirty politics to eliminate his more conservative opponents, is now pretending to be too Christian to go after Obama with the same aggressive take-it-to-the-mattresses spirit? And in this case, not even with the truth, not even with an honest assessment of Obama's background, ideology, and so on. And when it comes to Obama's record, Romney's approach seems to be something like, well, you know, we differ on a few things, but in the end, he's a great guy. Huh? This is sickening. And it's exactly what I warned you about. And I'm not the only one, of course. But let's just say we've been warning you that Romney is one of them. You know, he's an insider who is going to appease the left because he's part of the left. He's the left's guarantee that no matter who wins in November, the ship of state will continue heading full steam toward the hell of socialism. Look at Greece and see your future. Now, I've been joined by some pretty significant voices on this. Savage recently said the reason the GOP establishment chose Romney is because he will ensure another term for Obama. Savage has a way of overspeaking and hyperbole, and I think he does it purposely to make a point. But that's an interesting statement coming from him. If Obama gets booted for his obvious failure as a leader of the free world, Romney will serve to keep the ship of state headed southeast. Think about it. Joseph Farah recently has stepped up to it in a real flat declaration. I mean, he recently said that if Romney wins the GOP nomination, we lose, meaning conservatives lose. He believes Romney is Obama light. Man, you'd think these guys were listening to the brain massage. But the fact is, truth is like that. I mean, really, it's just simply there, and anyone with eyes can see it. So I don't take credit for these observations any more than I could take credit for noticing the sky is blue. It's blue. Anyone with eyes can see it's blue. Romney is Obama light. He's as phony as that three-stepping jester-in-chief already in office. And all of you trying to play smart politics by going with Romney, you've gotten snookered again. What you don't understand is that when it comes to, listen now, when it comes to lying and cheating and dirty politics and all that, you can't beat liars and cheats and dirty politicians. I mean, they're being what they are. You're trying to be what you're not. The right can never win using the tactics of the left. When you use the tactics of the left, you have moved left and you've lost the right. But, you know, maybe I have finally figured out how to help the liberals understand why Obama is such a lying, four-faced, backroom-dealing thug. He's mostly white. Oh, my friends. The jesters have taken the throne, and they hold scepters that are not mere baubles. I'll be right back.
Think every American needs a brain massage? We agree. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today. Don't do the internet? No problem. Mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbaum, Brain Masseur. Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter here, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch for the Paul Revere's out there looking for the signal. Yes, sir, right here in the church belfry arch, on the lookout, lighting the lamps to signal to all you Revere's out there, the enemy is coming, both by land and by sea. They're coming to take away our liberty. The homosexual marriage thing has gotten quite a lot of attention since Obama stepped forward and declared himself to be in favor of gay marriage. I mentioned last week what a shock it was. Oh, what a shock it was to discover that most folks apparently didn't know he was in favor of gay marriage. I knew it all along. Yes, I'm aware that when he ran for Senate, he declared himself to be against gay marriage, in sympathy or having empathy with those who desired same-sex marriages, but opposed in principle to the idea of changing the law or the legal definition of marriage by fiat of federal law. You know, he wanted to leave it to the states. But what you might not know is that before he was against changing the legal definition of marriage, he was for it. Yeah, that's right. In Chicago, when running for office in a very liberal district, he was in favor of legalizing gay marriage. He considered it a right. You see how he's just like Romney. Only the issue for Romney's abortion. That's right. In Chicago, when running for office in a very liberal district, he was in favor of legalizing gay marriage. He considered it a right. Yeah. And then, when he went for the Senate, He flipped on the issue and declared he no longer viewed it as a right. Actually, he didn't say anything about no longer. He just said he didn't consider it a right, although he was sympathetic for those who were so inclined. Now he has flipped again and has declared that he considers it a right on a par with the civil rights fought for by blacks in the 50s and 60s. Well, all that has happened here, my friends, is that Obama has been dragged out of the closet, kicking and fussing and screaming and crying all the way on this issue, and then cornered. So now he's just simply had to declare his position. I think Krauthammer did a very good job in his assessment of this development in a recent article he wrote and published in the Washington Post, May 17, titled Same-Sex Marriage, Empathy or Right. Krauthammer posits two arguments, he says, are used to advance homosexual marriage. One is based on empathy and the other is based in law. The empathy argument is the argument that appeals to the emotions of people. You know, how sad. They love each other. Come on, why can't two people who love each other get married, huh? Yeah. So, the 40-year-old loves the 9-year-old. So, you know. And enjoy the social esteem and honor of marriage along with heteros. Why can't they? It's unfair. Heterosexuals get to enjoy the public sanction and approval of their unions. But homosexuals are denied this public approval. And that's unfair and unkind. Yeah? Of course, it's a bunch of manure. First, listen, the only way homosexual marriages, even if they were legalized, could be countenanced in society with the same applause that it gives to heterosexual marriages would be when and if homosexuality is accepted as a legitimate sexual expression and embraced by society as a norm. And that's what they're really after here. The consequences of this would be horrendous, since all who have eyes and bother to look at the facts know it is a disease-ridden lifestyle that nature abhors and rejects. The physiology of the behavior, the simple physics of it all, is destructive in the same way that any behavior in a system that is contrary to the design of that system tends to be destructive to the structure of the system. Hello? Wake up. Male-to-male sex is destructive on the physiological level, but it's also a corruption of the psychological structure because it's contrary to nature. It's counterintuitive. It is innately rejected by nature because it is contrary to it. Those who purposely hide the truth about homosexuality from you are guilty of a crime, heaven's court, by the way, punishable by eternity in hell fire unless they repent. And what's my basis for that? Here you go. All liars shall have their part in the lake of fire. Yeah, Revelation 21:8. Besides, are you still with me here? The empathy argument has other problems. What are you going to do when a fellow starts complaining that just because some Christian thinks polygamy is wrong, he cannot marry, 5 or 10 women or have 5 or 10 male partners for that matter? No, wait. We have a Muslim in office now, so let's go ahead and yield to that. Go with Sharia law. Just because some Christian thinks polygamy is wrong, I can't marry my 4 wives who are all in love with me and I'm in love with them. We all love each other, hey? And then you see a picture of this guy with his 4 wives, all content and happy. There are 20 kids playing about them, but then sad because the fact that this Christian-based culture frowns on polygamy, we can't be married. The empathy argument can play your emotions into accepting pedophilia and all the rest. It's a weak argument, but by the way, all this is courtesy of the Brain Masseur. Krauthammer, as excellent as was his article, did not develop his thoughts along these lines. You should read his article, though. It's a good one. In any event, Krauthammer also posited another argument used to advance homosexual marriage, the legal one. And this is the one that says homos have a right to be married, on a par with heterosexuals. He shows reasons each argument is flawed, but his point is that this argument is the one that polarizes the public and is the one least likely to pay off for Obama in November. His point is that Obama made a mistake to move from the empathy position to the legal one on this question and that it could be a real loser for Obama in November. Well, we can hope so. We have seen Romney come out against legalization of gay marriage. Bravo. Here is at least one clear contrast between the two candidates at last. But Romney has not always been so clear in his position on this question. He is where Obama was. If you look carefully at Romney's shifting position on this and other questions, you'll see he's a bit left of center on the issue in the end. The way I add it up, that's the way he lands as far as I'm concerned. Now, I can tell you right now where he really is. All right? He could care less about this issue. He has no more concern about this than he does about abortion. He's just a political gamester. Anyway, I'm going to have to skip over some stuff here. This is related. A priest ordained in Rome, no less, has written a book offering an interpretation of the scripture that would make the famous heretic Arius look like a junior scripture wrester. Now, before I go into this, I cannot find that this priest has the imprimatur of the Pope, nor of his cardinal, nor of the bishop of his diocese, or of his priest in his parish, so we can't say he represents the official position of the Catholic Church. Nevertheless, it won't be the first time a Baptist has found fault with the interpretations of a Catholic priest. Har har. Anyway, here's what I see developing. Guys like this fellow, Daniel Helmaniac. Helmaniac. That's interesting. Anyway, so Helmaniac here argues that Sodom's sin was not homosexuality. The sin, according to this priest, was the attempted gang rape of the guests in Lot's house. Well, he searches scripture for references to Sodom, but I find he is selective, and he arrays a cherry-picked selection of verses cleverly to organize an argument that says, essentially, the sin of Sodom was not sexual perversity, but rather, they were as Ezekiel the prophet proclaimed, quote, "Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy," end quote. So this priest would have us believe God dropped fire and brimstone upon the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah because they were prideful, full of bread, idle, and careless regarding the poor and needy. That's interesting. However, Ezekiel, my friends, does not say that Sodom was given to the destruction of eternal fire for these things. Oh yes, he points these things out as sins of Sodom, as the iniquity of Sodom, but he doesn't say that's why the fire fell. If you want to know what provoked God to drop the fire and brimstone on Sodom, you need to read another verse in Jude verse 7. Conveniently, the priest left out any reference to Jude verse 7 in the article I read, written by him. I've not read his book, but so perhaps he attempts to wrestle this verse into conformity with his views, as he does Romans 1. And by the way, I'm going to preach a message on this Sunday night. Need to be there 6 p.m. Sunday night at the Lighthouse. I'm going to lay it all out for you. Well, he doesn't mention Jude 7 in his article, where God stipulates that the sin of Sodom was, quote, "giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh," end quote. This was the reason that, quote, "they suffered the vengeance of eternal fire," end quote. So if you want the place in the Bible where God tells us why he dropped the fire on them, here's where you go. The priest believes it is necessary to read these scriptures, of course, in their original languages, and to keep them in their context and blah, 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 blah. The same drivel used by every heretic to blow smoke in your face, and especially in the face and the eyes of the ignorant and unlearned, so they can make you think they know what they're talking about with regard to what it says in the original language and the benefit of their extensive research into the context, when neither of those things is true. Indeed, scriptures must be translated in conformity to the original languages and interpreted in their proper context, and I really wish that's what these guys would do, because if they did, they would find very differently from what they do. Nevertheless, since the priest likes to refer us to the Greek, note that the word translated fornication in Jude 7 is pornoeo, it's rooted in that word, a form of it, and has a wide application encompassing all forms of sexual perversity. And so, now it's time for a bit of contextual interpretation. For we define this word, pornoeo, which refers to all manner of sexual perversity, and we define sexual perversity by the words of the God who used this word to define the sin of Sodom. You know, the sin that provoked him to lay upon it the judgment of eternal fire. And when you study the scriptures in their context, you find this word fornication includes homosexuality. Leviticus 20 verse 13, or as defined as men with men, working that which is unseemly in Romans 1:27, which in context Paul said was unnatural. So according to the Bible, while it is certainly true, the character of the people in Sodom was aptly described by Ezekiel as prideful. And I mean, the Sodomites were really full of themselves and still are today, by the way. Full of bread and with way too much time in their hands. Yeah, you know, you really pay attention to the Sodomites today, and they hold a lot of bread, man, and have a lot of time on their hands for their activism, and careless regarding the poor and needy. And, you know, how many homeless shelters, soup lines, and charity hospitals have been founded by the Sodomites? How about zero? Truthfully, now, while there might be individual exceptions, there always is the exception. Generally speaking, the culture of that community is not one known for pity for the weak or the destitute. No, there's more of a tendency within their ranks to be kind of Darwinian in this matter. Survival of the fittest. Uh-huh. But if you want to know what sin developed in this community that put them over the line and provoked God to rain fire and brimstone upon them, you have to look at Jude 7. It was because of their sexual perversity, which extended so far as to pursue strange flesh, unnatural. In other words, the sin of Sodom even goes beyond homosexuality. Yeah. They had corrupted themselves to the place of reprobation concerning anything right and good. They were given over to all of this, just like Paul said would happen when he outlined the progression of degeneration in a society. Notice Romans 1, 17 through 30. The progression of degradation away from God and his law peaks at this point when men, quote, leaving the natural use of the woman, burning in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves the recompense of their error, which was meet, which is to say fitting or appropriate, end quote. At that point, you keep reading, morality collapses until the community is, quote, filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, and he goes on, end quote, in verse 29. You see, that's where we're headed. If we embrace homosexuality as a culture, it severs the moral restraints that keep us from moral chaos. Okay, I've got to move toward conclusion. Let's see here. You know what? I don't have time to develop it. This is very interesting. The ACLU, as you know, is suing, as you perhaps you know, is suing a school for displaying the Ten Commandments. Well, what's news about that? Here's where the news comes in. A judge is suggesting a compromise with the ACLU, and that would be to lop off the first four commandments, at least in the Protestant version of the Ten, and there's a distinction. We'll talk about it later. Allowing the six commandments to be posted, but to remove all the ones that are related to God. Are we supposed to pretend the Ten Commandments had nothing to do with shaping our government or culture? That's just historical fact, my friend. I'm sure you're getting tired of these yappers constantly biting at our heels like annoying little dogs. But I must close. So we'll do it this way. Consider what Cecil DeMille, producer of the Ten Commandments movie, the one shot in part out there on the beaches of Guadalupe, I understand. When he produced that movie, he considered it a tribute to the influence of the Ten Commandments in shaping our government and serving as the basis for our liberties. You see, he understood that the whole Ten Commandments story was one that declared we're not subjects of the state, but of God. That we're not under the tyranny of man, but under the rule of a sovereign God. And his view of the commandments of the Creator was that God's moral laws are integrated into the structure of the universe that he created in the same way that the natural law, say, of gravity is integrated into the system of the universe. And as there are natural consequences for violating the law of gravity, likewise, there are natural consequences for violating the laws of nature's God, the moral laws of nature's God. So I conclude, anytime a behavior is introduced into a system that is contrary to the design of that system, it will destroy the system. If you introduce homosexuality into the system of societal organization, especially ones ordered around Judeo-Christian mores, it will destroy that system. And of course, I think that's part of their plan. And when this takes place, you end up with chaotic, survival of the fittest, anarchist, anti-God, anti-law, anti-order, a society modeled by Sodom. And where does it lead? I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch that signal the enemies on the march. Now you call and let me know if you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000, 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Drop the one if you're using a cell phone. Or contact me by email. Go to therainmassageshow.com. Therainmassageshow.com. Some people have trouble with the word massage for some reason. They get message or something that's happening there. I think we fixed it though so you can get to us even if you misspell it. But it's M-A-S-S-A-G-E. Therainmassageshow.com. And click on the contact us button. You'll get an opportunity there to write me an email. You can select lights on or lights off. And just give me a piece of your mind to chew on. I've certainly thrown out a chunk of steak to you that you might chew on for a while this week. Call 888-770-8000. Or email me at thebrainmassageshow.com, thebrainmassageshow.com. And if you're in a hurry, you can just say lights on and hang up, or lights off and hang up, or leave me a message. Give me a piece of your mind to chew on. Or when you go to the website, thebrainmassageshow.com, click on the contact us button, just click lights on and send, or lights off and send, or click lights on or lights off and give me a message. Love to hear from my listeners. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
Gotta have more? We understand. Tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com.